My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent. What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 4 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back against the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. So this week, I want to continue the discussion we've been having on Twitter and Facebook, a discussion that has actually been going on for a long time and has recently intensified with the deaths of people like George Floyd, Rayshard Brooks, Breonna Taylor, Jacob Blake, and then the subsequent protests and riots around the country. So this episode is Policing America. Now, I support police, and people are often confused about that because I consider myself a libertarian. And the assumption is that libertarians are supposed to be anti-cop. That's not true. Well, anarchists, yeah, but not all libertarians are all in for complete self-governance. But look, I mean, if libertarianism means that I have to throw logic and common sense out the window and demonize police officers while defending criminals, then I'm out. Can't do it. I'll just call myself something else. I support liberty and minimizing state power and abuse, but I do not support that. I am what you would call, I guess, a minarchist libertarian, which basically means that I recognize the need for government just in an extremely limited capacity, because I also recognize the dangers of government, particularly a government that has too much power and too much control. You know, maybe I should start telling people that I'm a founding father libertarian, because I support our founding father's initial vision for the role of government in America, which was, of course, limited. So, in essence, maximum liberty and minimum government is what I believe in. And part of that minimum government is a duty to protect the rights of the people. And police are a vital part of that. So yeah, I unapologetically back the blue. Not blindly, mind you, because there are certain instances that are indefensible, and nobody actually likes or supports dirty cops. But I do support police in general, because you can support police while still recognizing that government needs to be small and restrained. Now, here in a few weeks, I'm planning on starting to have guests on the show, and I'm looking at having on a guy named Zeke Arkham, who is a police officer in New York, and you know, just get his perspective on what's happening in the country and see a little through the eyes of someone who is actually in law enforcement and on the front lines. Yeah, I'm very interested in hearing what he has to say about all this. And we'll call that Policing America Part 2. So be looking forward to that one. But it's important to recognize that police officers are human beings, and most of them, the vast majority of them, want to serve their communities and want to go home at the end of their shift to their families. Many people just don't think about that. The ongoing cries of defund the police and ACAB and whatever else these people are chanting is just extremely ignorant and dangerous nonsense. Just absolute madness to be out there denigrating and vilifying all police officers like they're doing. Complete lack of perspective. And it doesn't help matters when it turns out that the 4 most high-profile cases of the past 3 months have all been complete farces with this racist killer cop narrative. It's just not true. None of them. Of course, it doesn't matter that the narratives have been lies. The actual facts of the cases make no difference at all. They have an agenda to push. The fake news media doesn't care what the truth is. It doesn't make a difference to them that George Floyd had fatal levels of fentanyl in his system and that he was saying he couldn't breathe long before he was ever on the ground. Or that Breonna Taylor was involved with a serious drug trafficker who regularly used her car and her address, so her house and her name were actually on the warrant. And that she was not asleep in her bed, as people still claim, but was in the hallway and was unfortunately caught in the crossfire between her boyfriend and the police. Does it matter? Does it matter that Rayshard Brooks actually fought the police? stole a taser and attempted to tase them with it? Does it matter that a woman whom Jacob Blake had sexually assaulted and abused was the one who called the police on him? Called the police to help because she had a restraining order against him and he wasn't supposed to even be there. No hashtag MeToo movement for her, right? Does it matter that Blake fought with officers and shook off two taser attempts? Or that there was a knife in the car? Or that there were kids in the car? I mean, were the cops just supposed to just let him do what he wants? Just let him go? With kids involved? Did it matter that the guy they rioted and looted over in Minneapolis last week was a murderer who killed himself? Did it matter that the guy they rioted and looted over in Chicago was shooting at police when he was killed? Did it matter in the LA shooting on Monday that the man fought police and pulled a gun? And it became national news and people protested anyway. Does any of it matter? It doesn't seem to. The actual facts seem to have very little to no bearing on how people conceptualize what happens when it comes to police and how they respond to it. So you'll forgive me if I don't take your emotional criticisms of policing very seriously. If we can't discuss this stuff honestly and use actual facts instead of emotional hyperbole, then there's nothing to discuss. Exactly zero problems are going to get fixed that way. And when the demands for justice are coming from the same crowd that continues to canonize people like Michael Brown, despite multiple investigations finding that the hands-up-don't-shoot narrative was 100% a lie, and that Brown assaulted Wilson and tried to take his firearm. How can anyone take you seriously if you can't even acknowledge that? It doesn't seem like people want justice to me. It seems like they want vengeance. And that's entirely different. Yeah, I just think that many people have no idea what policing actually entails. It's extremely easy to have all kinds of criticisms and what they should have done opinions while sitting in the safety of your own home when your life is not in imminent danger. I've said many times that people need to, at the very least, go on a ride-along with an officer to get a sense of what they have to deal with. But I think people should also go through a shoot-don't-shoot simulation. And that's about as close as you can get to understanding what it's actually like for officers in high-stress, life-or-death situations. Of course, your life isn't actually in danger in those scenarios, but people still fail them over and over again. There are all kinds of videos on YouTube of city leaders and local reporters going through these scenarios, and every single time that people say, "Wow, I didn't realize how little time you have to react." That is the universal theme. I didn't realize how little time you have to react. One of my favorite videos was from a few years ago. It was a guy in Phoenix named Reverend Jarrett Maupin, a big community activist, led marches to protest Phoenix PD whenever they shot an unarmed individual. So he definitely had opinions. And he did the shoot, don't shoot simulation to his credit. And he had one situation where a guy wasn't complying, wasn't listening to him, and went around the back of a truck, retrieved a gun, and shot him. So if that had been real life, he would have been dead. Then he had another scenario where a couple guys were fighting. And when he approached, one of the guys aggressively moved toward him and didn't follow commands to stop. And Maupin shot him. Shot an unarmed man. The exact thing he was criticizing police for doing. But the best part of it was what he had to say about it all. This is Reverend Maupin talking about why he shot the guy and what he thought about the overall experience.
Tell me why you shot.
Well, I've shot because he was within that zone. You know, I felt there was an imminent threat. I didn't necessarily see him armed, but he came clearly to do some harm to the officer, to my person. It's hard to make that call. It shakes you up.
I didn't understand how important compliance was, but after going through this, yeah, my attitude has changed. This is all unfolding in 10 to 15 seconds. People need to comply with the orders of law enforcement officers for their own sake.
People need to comply with the orders of law enforcement officers. Just that simple experience gave him perspective of what police have to deal with and how quickly they have to make decisions that could end up costing them their life if they make a mistake. The reason it's so difficult for us to realize that until being put in that scenario is because when you're watching it on a screen and your stress levels are normal and not through the roof, things happen much slower and you have time to analyze and think about all the stuff that you already know, all the hindsight information. You can pause and examine and rewind it back and watch it again. But in the moment, you don't have that. You have what you know going in, which may not be very much. You have the behavior of the suspect, the environment itself, and split-second decisions if things go sideways. So I think if you're going to be heavily critical of police, then you need to go through a simulation like that and gain some perspective so you know what it's like and you know what it is that they're dealing with. So I mentioned this last episode, but I like to discuss psychology. Now, I'm not a psychologist by any means, but I have a bachelor's in psychology, and I find it interesting and applicable to many of the things that we talk about, particularly cognitive biases and distortions. So, I don't know, maybe we'll make this a running thing where each episode we apply a different psychological concept and how it applies to the topic, because I think it is helpful to understand what's actually happening. So this week, we'll actually talk about a few different ones since they're more common and I think pretty much everyone is familiar with them. And maybe even to a point of being cliche, but they're still important to what's happening in these situations, which are having real-world consequences with riots and people actually losing their lives. So the first one is what most people call, of course, jumping to conclusions. And we've seen plenty of that over the last few years. Now, as cliche as that is, it is a cognitive heuristic used as a mental shortcut whenever we don't have all the information we need to draw a conclusion about a situation. Now, the concept of jumping to conclusions can be broken down into a few different categories, but the two I want to focus on are extreme extrapolation and mind reading. Now, mind reading is just what you think it is, and people do it to police officers constantly. You watch a 10-second video clip and believe that you know exactly what the officer is thinking. And the whole accusation of an officer shooting somebody because they're black is one of the clearest examples of mind reading. There is often no evidence at all that this is the case. People just look and see a white police officer and a black suspect, and that's all they think they need to know. They're somehow able to ascertain exactly what is happening in the police officer's mind and what his or her motivations are based solely on skin color, which I believe there's a term for that, right? That's crazy! This mind reading tactic has also been an absolute favorite of the media. They love to do it. I dare you to try to watch CNN or MSNBC or read the Washington Post or New York Times and count how many times these so-called objective journalists attempt to pass off mind reading as factual. They will definitely tell you what Trump is thinking. This is exactly what Trump is thinking. Yeah, okay. Now, it's incredible how they're able to do that, how they're able to get inside his head and tell us exactly what his thoughts and motivations are. Brian Stelter does it all the time. My goodness, just magical. You're a wizard, Brian. You know, they ran a headline a couple weeks ago about some anonymous source familiar with the president's thinking. Familiar with the president's thinking. What are you even talking about? You know, of course, objectivity doesn't matter to them. We are well past even pretending like they care about being objective. But anyway, we see this all the time, and it overlaps with the hostile attribution bias, because in order for people to believe that the other person has hostile intentions without any evidence, they must be able to read that person's mind. And you know, what's weird about this is that they actually believe that the police officer should also be able to read minds too. Like, hey man, that guy was unarmed. He wasn't reaching for a gun. Like, how on earth was he supposed to know that? Of course, after the fact, we know that, but how was he supposed to know that then? Mind reading. It's crazy. Okay, so the other piece is extreme extrapolation. It's taking something small and extrapolating it to something huge. And this extends well beyond policing and to how many on the radical left view America as a whole. The most obvious example of this would be that an instance of racism or perceived racism is evidence that racism is systemic and widespread and pervasive and continually growing throughout America. For policing, people view a single questionable police shooting and extrapolate that to all police shootings in the past and in the future, further to all police officers themselves, and conclude that law enforcement as an institution is corrupt and that the entire system needs to be dismantled. So, and none of it is data driven. There's no logic. There's no reasoning. It's all emotional, reactive. Reality is distorted. The shadows dance on the cave wall and they refuse to turn their heads and look outside. The shadows are reality, as Plato's allegory goes. And it is nearly impossible to convince them otherwise. Additionally, there's something called hindsight bias, which I'm sure you've also heard of. A hindsight bias is basically the tendency to believe that a particular outcome was more predictable than it actually was. Everybody knows the phrase, hindsight is 20/20, and it's true. Once we have the facts, we feel like we can see the whole picture and often feel like we could have easily predicted it before, even though without the facts that we know now, that picture was extremely fuzzy and unpredictable. Now, people will apply this to police shootings all the time. What they'll do is take the facts of the case afterward and apply that to the behavior of the officers. That blends with mind reading, but if you look at a case like Jacob Blake, for instance, did any of the cops know that Blake did not have a gun? Did they know what he was trying to do when he opened that car door? No. What did they know? Like I said earlier, they knew that this guy was resisting arrest. Tasers weren't working on him. He had something in his hands, not clear what it was. There were children in the vehicle. He wasn't following commands. And he opened the door to the car and leaned inside. And all of this is happening very quickly. But when you're not there in the situation yourself, you jump to conclusions and mind read and apply hindsight bias to the situation. Even the information we have now still points to a dangerous situation. But the fact that the officers didn't know everything that we do now made the situation much more volatile and dangerous in the moment. And that's difficult to get people to understand unless they actually go through it themselves. But it makes you wonder, how many times do people have to be proven wrong before they stop jumping to conclusions? I've said before, I think the best course of action is just to try to wait at least 48 hours, 48 hours after an emotional event like a police shooting before coming to a conclusion about it. Because oftentimes more information comes out in that 48 hours that turns the initial assumptions on their head. It becomes very dangerous to jump to conclusions, particularly when those conclusions lead to rioting and violence, and people end up getting hurt or even killed in the process. I think too many people just have their entire worldview and perception of reality distorted. I blame the media for most of that, as we talked about in the second episode, how they selectively report things in order to deceive people. Like pushing unarmed black people being shot by police and completely ignoring unarmed white people shot by police, even though more unarmed white people were killed. I posted a thread on Twitter the other day detailing each of the 24 cases in 2019 that were unarmed white people. There were actually 25 listed in the Washington Post Fatal Force database, but one of them was two police officers playing Russian roulette, which is insane, but not something that I would really call an officer-involved shooting because they weren't on duty and it wasn't related to any kind of suspected crime or anything like that. Just two people being extremely stupid. So I left that one off the list. But 24 unarmed white people were killed by police in 2019. 24. Now, I know I addressed this in episode one when discussing the fraudulence of Black Lives Matter. But I feel like I need to go and address some of the arguments that have been made here as well against the threat of unarmed black people. Many people have looked at that list and criticized it or mocked it, saying it proves that police are basically trigger-happy killers Or they make the argument that most of the white people were killed were actively trying to hurt or kill police, or committing suicide by cop by pretending they had a firearm, etc. Which is actually true. Like, 7 cases out of the 24 were cases where the person was shot either by accident or walking aggressively toward police or something like that, but not actively fighting police. So there were 7. But the assumption here is that this is not true for black people, that black people are just shot when they comply. You know, they do what the cops tell them to do and the cops shoot them anyways. That's the assumption. But as you can imagine, that is not true. There were 14 unarmed black people killed in 2019. Perhaps I should make a thread for them too, so people can see exactly what happened. But contrary to the popular belief of those arguing that police shoot black men for no reason, there were only really 3 that were questionable. And 2 were accidental discharges of a firearm. One where a guy was fighting with police and the gun went off. And the other was following a car chase when the guy finally pulled over and the cop was trying to reach in through the window and take his keys and his gun went off. The only real questionable shooting other than that, out of the 14, was Atiana Jefferson, who made national news after police came to her house for a welfare check and shot through her window, killing her. Of course, she allegedly also had a firearm pointed at the window, but she didn't know they were police and she was presumably trying to protect herself. So she wasn't really unarmed, but the cops screwed up royally in that case, and the officer was indicted for that. The other cases were people fighting officers, choking officers, reaching for their waistbands, and attempting to run over officers with their vehicles. So no, most unarmed black people are not killed for no reason. Incorrect. But even so, the premise that we have a problem with police killing people at all, of any race, is just statistically false. And this is one of the problems with living in such a big country. Our perspective is just completely skewed. We see raw numbers and we think they're a lot, and maybe they would be if our country wasn't so huge. But I mean, each state is like its own country. We're like 50 countries put together. So let's look at it by the numbers. Do we actually have an epidemic of police killings in America? In 2018, police killed 990 suspects. That same year, according to the FBI UCR, there were 7.7 million arrests. That means that when compared to arrests, police killed 0.01% of suspects. That's one suspect for every 10,000 arrests. That was the ratio. 0.01%. And only 58 of that 990 were unarmed. So that means that over 94% of the suspects who were killed by police that year were armed. Do you know what 58 divided by 7.7 million is? It's 0.0007%. 3 zeros. 7 people per 1 million arrests were unarmed when killed by police. Does that sound like an epidemic to you? Does it sound like police are just going around murdering people for fun? 0.01% total? 0.0007% unarmed? Just to drive this home, that means that in arrest situations, police do not kill 99.99% of suspects, violent or not, and 99.9993% of suspects who are arrested are not killed while unarmed. I mean, how much closer to 100% can you get without actually being perfect? I mean, 7.7 million arrests. I think Heather McDonald said there were 10 million arrests last year. I mean, just can you even imagine how many arrests that is? How many arrests go fine without a suspect being killed? To call this an epidemic, it just lacks perspective. Now, this doesn't mean that we shouldn't care or that bad cops shouldn't be held accountable. But cities are burning down and people are getting killed because of this lie that police are out of control and killing people, specifically black people. And it's just not true. Another thing people don't really consider when we're talking about policing is the fact that officers are being killed. And thankfully, it isn't that many in the grand scheme of things. But people get confused by this and begin thinking that lower numbers of police being killed means that the job isn't as dangerous. And that is an extremely flawed assumption. Looking at the Officer Down Memorial page back in 2018, since that's the year we've been looking at, there were 52 officers who were shot and killed, 9 who were killed by vehicular assault, which someone using their car as a weapon, and 4 from general assault, which includes other weapons. So that's 65 officers who were killed that year. Out of roughly 800,000 officers, that is a low percentage. However, you have to consider that the vast majority of the people who police killed were actively trying to kill them. So had they not, we would likely be looking at hundreds more of law enforcement deaths than we have. If we concede that the vast majority of the 990 suspects who were killed in 2018 were actively trying to kill police, and 65 officers died that year, that means that police survived 94% of potentially fatal encounters. Of course, that's rough because not all potentially fatal encounters end with anybody dead. In fact, most do not. And additionally, there are some cases both the suspect and the officer end up dying. So that isn't exact, but the point is to get people to understand that just because an officer didn't die in a situation doesn't mean that situation wasn't a potentially fatal situation. And it definitely doesn't mean that policing is any less dangerous. So here's the thing. I think that a lot of people do understand this and understand the importance of police. I think the most vocal, obnoxious people with the bullhorn are just the ones that get the attention. And of course, the media is complicit in pushing this stuff and pretending like America hates police and loves rioting, which is completely backwards. And Democrats are finding that out the hard way. But they've been trying to shove it down our throats all day, every day. There was a Gallup poll done a few weeks ago that showed that 61% of Black Americans wanted the same amount of police presence in their neighborhoods, and 20% wanted more. Only 19% of Black Americans said that they wanted less police. 19%. So what does that tell you? It tells you that the media is shining a spotlight on the 19% and ignoring the other 81% who support the police. If that doesn't make you angry, I don't know what will. Are they trying to manipulate and sway public opinion by only focusing on the minority and pretending like it's the majority? Is there any other explanation for why they would do this? And when you add it on top of how they've been pretending like the rioters are the good guys and the police are the villains, and providing cover for people burning and looting and making wild claims of secret police, or making it sound like the police disbursement tactics are somehow evil while buildings burn in the background and they call it mostly peaceful. Their motivations are highly, highly suspect. Now, one of the things that really, really gets to me is what goes on in the inner cities as far as violence, particularly when that violence affects children. If you've been following me for any amount of time, you're aware that I've been working to maintain a memorial page of kids under 18 who've been killed by street violence. And I try to update it at least once a week, and I'm always adding at least 10 names to that list every week. Some weeks, many more than that. And every week, I sit at my computer and I cry. Because it's just so heartbreaking looking at these pictures of these teenagers and these little children. Yeah, some of them younger than 10. Many of them younger than 10. And it's just something that you can't imagine going through as a parent. And I'm sure some of you listening have probably experienced losing a child. And I got to tell you, my heart goes out to you because I don't know how you get through that other than the strength of God. It would have to be a supernatural intervention to get me through something like that. But just imagining what it would be like, just it cripples me and I can't handle it. So I can't even begin to fathom what these parents are going through or what you've gone through if you've lost a child. So my prayers go out to you and my admiration as well for your strength and resolve. But this memorial page that I have is just it's devastating to scroll through. So I suggest not doing it unless you're ready to bawl like a baby for a while. It's tough to look at. But anyway, I haven't updated it since Saturday. But as it stands, there have been 41 children killed by street violence this month alone, and 141 since June 1st. And it's probably more than that because I haven't gone back yet and finished adding to June, so there are likely more from that month that I've missed. But at least 141 since June, and 41 just this month. That includes a one-year-old named Zakir Young in Pittsburgh, an eight-year-old named Michaela Pickett in Akron, a three-year-old named Trinity Randolph in Louisville, a five-year-old named Cannon Hennett in Wilson, North Carolina, a two-year-old named Raylan Craig in St. Joseph, Missouri, a five-year-old named Natalia Lomeli Graham in Somerville, South Carolina, and another one-year-old named Tyree Housel in Akron. You can go to my website, and I have GoFundMe links listed if you want to help any of these families out or the families of the other kids who were killed. But my point in bringing this up is that these kinds of things are what the Defund the Police movement, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, things that they don't think about at all. There is no circumstance where we should ever tolerate a one-year-old baby being killed. And in my mind, we should do whatever we can to protect those children. And if that means putting more police in those neighborhoods, then we should do that. Because research shows that police presence in high crime hotspots deters crime. So we need more police, not less. It is incredible to me that we, as a society, largely ignore cases like one-year-old Zakir Young, whose killer has still not been caught as of this recording. But we move heaven and earth for a rapist who fought the police. Ignoring the fact that U.S. Marshals just rescued 39 missing children from sex trafficking, while denigrating police for how they treated a drug addict who resisted arrest. Supporting people who cheer when someone who supports Trump and supports police is shot dead in cold blood, they celebrate his death, while ignoring the murder of someone like David Dorn because it doesn't fit the narrative. And somehow conclude that police are the problem. I'm sure most of you have heard it by now, but I just want to play a little bit of Ann Dorn's speech from the RNC. Ann Dorn is the wife of David Dorn, who was shot and killed during the St. Louis riots, killed by looters. But it was one of the most impactful speeches I've heard in a long time, and as she says, the hope is that it shakes America from this nightmare. And here she is. Listen.
I learned of all this around 4 a.m. when our doorbell rang. The chief of police was standing outside. I wondered why Dave had not answered the door. It wasn't uncommon for him to be up watching TV at this time. I called out to him several times. There was no reply. He just wasn't there. I led in the chief, and fighting back tears, he uttered the words every officer's spouse dreads. I relive that horror in my mind every single day. My hope is that having you relive it with me now will help shake this country from this nightmare we are witnessing in our cities and bring about positive peaceful change. How do we get to this point where so many young people are callous and indifferent towards human life? This isn't a video game where you can commit mayhem and then just hit reset and bring all the characters back to life. David is never, never coming back to me. He was murdered by people who didn't know and just didn't care. He would have done anything to help them. Violence and destruction are not legitimate forms of protest. They do not safeguard Black lives. They only destroy them. President Trump understands this, has offered federal help to restore order in our communities. In a time when police departments are short on resources and manpower, we need that help. We should accept that help. We must heal before we can affect change. But we cannot heal amid devastation and chaos. President Trump knows we need more Davids in our communities, not fewer. We need to come together in peace and remember that every life is precious.
We do need more Davids in the world. Most police officers are good people, trying to serve their communities and do the best they can, and we need more of them. Our country as a whole is in desperate need of unity. Real unity, not agree with me or else unity, but brotherhood and sisterhood unity. I don't agree with everything you say, but I defend your right to say it, unity. We are more alike than we are different, unity. We need to come together and unify under the common ideals and principles of our founding fathers. We should always strive to make the world a better place and work to fix problems, but as Nietzsche said, beware that when fighting monsters, you yourself do not become a monster. For when you gaze long into the abyss stares back into you. We cannot allow ourselves to descend into the chaos. Like Anne said, we need to come together in peace and remember that every life is precious. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent. If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. DonorBox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research, challenge everything, don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next week. God bless.